Good morning to everybody. This is Andy Elder, the president of the Elder Group, and welcome to our webinar today. Dr. Frank Salvatore just called me, and he has a crisis on his hands, somebody that he has to attend to, which life comes first. He will be joining us in about 5 to 7 minutes, but sends his apologies. So I'd like to say good morning to our West Coast and Mountain Time people, and good afternoon to everybody else listening to today's webinar. As I said, this is Andy Elder for the Elder Group. And today we're doing this webinar regarding the new landscape and business that we believe we'll be experiencing in the very near future. And, you know, before we get started, I thought about a message that came to me about water and how water adapts to its environment and how it shapes and molds itself without ever losing its integrity and the lifeblood to our existence. Henceforth, the adaptability of today's perspective and the positive approach that these wonderful speakers who are literally world-class in their field have taken time to talk to the masses about what they're envisioning. So I'd just like to end this little short note by saying that, you know, now and forevermore, we as a society will never give up. We will always have love in our heart for humanity, and we will always believe in our faith. And with all that being said, now I'd like to introduce you to our moderator and my friend, Elliot Whistler. And Elliot, take it away.
Thanks, Andy. Welcome to everybody on the call. We've got five fantastic speakers today, and we're excited that everybody has joined us. My name is Elliot Whistler, as Andy's mentioned. I'm the founder and CEO of Clearbrook. We advise about $9 billion of assets for 60 institutional clients across the U.S. And I'm going to introduce the five speakers we have for today. And then the topics we'll be discussing. Each one will take about 5 to 7 minutes and chat with you all. And then we're going to open it up. We've received a bunch of questions from everyone. We'll take those questions. And hopefully everybody will find this very informational. So today we have Clearbrook's Chief Investment Officer joining us, Tim Ng. He has over 30 years of experience managing money and working with clients, both on long-only and alternative assets. We're also very fortunate to have Barry LePatner, the founder of a New York City-based law firm, LePatner & Associates, a very prominent leader on legal issues affecting real estate in the city, and Troy Anderson and DeMarco. They are a boutique interior design firm that focuses on designing complex spaces domestically, both with over 30 years experience, and they'll be talking about how this virus has impacted New York City and other major hubs throughout the United States. As Andy mentioned, Frank is running a little bit late, but Dr. Frank Salvatore is a member of multitude of professional societies and a founder of the Skylands Urology Group. He's a founding board member of the Specialty Surgery Center in Sparta, New Jersey. So we have five great speakers for you all today. We're going to cover the domestic and global economic updates and the impact that the virus has had. We're going to look at how we've been repositioning portfolios post-sell-off and rebalancing with the upcoming consideration of the turnaround of the markets. We're going to look at the future of the office workplace, given that everybody has been working from home throughout the United States and globally. We're going to be looking at the remodeling and how it's going to affect working going forward. We're going to be looking at how the virus is impacting real estate and infrastructure moving forward. We're also going to be looking, and Dr. Frank will touch upon this, how stress is impacting everybody's life and how we should be really focusing on that moving forward. So those are the topics we'll be looking at today. So let's kick it off with Tim Ng, our CIO at Clearbrook. And Tim, you want to take it over from here?
Sure. Thank you, Ellie, and good morning, everyone. As we enter a a global situation that has not ever existed before, from the standpoint that virtual industries, businesses have been literally shut down around the globe. You know, the question a lot of investors, individuals alike, are what's going to be the impact overall in terms of businesses going forward? How is it impacting the financial markets? And is there light at the end of the tunnel, which is what we all really care about at this point? So if you just look at the United States, the big points to really look at over the next several weeks is going to be the dramatic rise in unemployment rates. You know, just going back 4 or 5 weeks ago into February, we were all celebrating a historical low in terms of the unemployment rate. We're running at about 3.5% unemployment rate, which was the lowest since 1969. And we had approximately 5.7 million individuals who were effectively unemployed. With the shutdown, particularly in the restaurants, leisure, hospitality, travel areas, unfortunately, we're going to see that rate increase quite dramatically. We're seeing the rate already pick up last week in the unemployment reports, but should peak, by estimates of economists, in June at approximately 13% unemployment rate, which unfortunately means that an additional goes out of work, unfortunately. That, of course, is going to have a negative impact on overall global economic growth. You know, we came into the year hoping that the U.S., for example, would grow by 2.2%. And as of right now, with estimates, with everything shut down for the first quarter and second quarter, annualized estimates is that GDP will decline in the first and second quarter by about 10% to as bad as 30%. So it's going to be quite dramatic. Hopefully, when the containment policies are essentially eased and or pulled off beginning in the second quarter, the situation should improve, but one would think it's going to be a gradual recovery over time, not essentially a shock where you get a V-shaped recovery. The third point is, of course, how is it going to affect corporate earnings? Corporate earnings came into the year hoping that it would grow this year based on the S&P 500 by 4.4%. Obviously, with the shutdown of businesses beginning in the mid-March and now going into foreseeable future, particularly into the second quarter, corporate earnings are going to decline in around about 5% for the first quarter, and the worst is going to happen in the second quarter, minus 10. So instead of growing at 4.4% for the year, the estimates today as it stands is that S&P earnings will decline by 1.2%. And that's the reason you've seen global financial markets decline over the past several weeks, pretty much across the board between Europe, Asia, and emerging markets being 20%, and in certain cases as high as 35%. But on the horizon, you know, we call that, Clearbrook, three important points that had to take place, or three important events that had to take place before we found a bottom and eventually a recovery. Because as we know, financial markets are a forward-looking mechanism. So they care about what's going to happen in the next 6 months, 9 months, and so on and so forth, and why you're seeing the markets rally today. One was global banks had to lower interest rates, and they have. So you effectively have zero interest rates around the globe at this point in time. So individuals, corporations can borrow essentially at historically low rates to help their businesses. Two is fiscal stimulus. Fiscal stimulus meaning how can the government, in terms of subsidies, unemployment insurance, paying for COVID-19 tests, loans to businesses, et cetera, could help the underlying global economies and the economies in their own regions. The U.S. just in the past week or so passed a $2.2 trillion stimulus bill. As we mentioned before, the Federal Reserve lowered interest rates and have opened up lending to major corporations, individuals, and actually governments around the globe, to where the stimulus in the United States, to put in context, is now at about $7 trillion. And that's about a third of the U.S. GDP on an annual basis. So what that is going to do is help, hopefully, improve the underlying sentiment, and there is very, very good talks occurring right now in Washington in that you can't expect a fourth stimulus package, perhaps to the magnitude of another $2 trillion. So they are helping. So what does this really do? It hopefully will open up the back of the economy in the second half of this year, improve underlying consumers, the sentiment, get businesses back online so that there will be a smaller recovery in the third quarter and hopefully a very, very much outsized recovery in the fourth quarter. From an asset allocation perspective, that lends us to say that there are opportunities in equities at this point. Since World War II, in every recession that we've seen, the markets have tended to turn. And within 1 year, the average rate of return on the S&P 500, 1 year following the bottoming of a recession, the average return has been between 25 to 35%. So keep that in mind. So areas which we are at ClearBook emphasizing, information technology, healthcare, consumer services, and consumer staples, we think there's tremendous value there. And stay to the U.S. high quality, good growth, good balance sheet companies to selectively look at re-entering the market over the next several weeks. So with that,
great.
That's our company.
Thank you, Tim. Thanks very much. Barry, you want to jump in on the real estate side?
Sure. Good afternoon and good morning to those of you who are west of New York City. The COVID-19 pandemic, as Tim just pointed out, represents a crisis unlike any that the real estate design and construction communities have ever experienced. I want to focus my discussion today first on identifying the unique problems that owners and architects, engineers and contractors will face once construction resumes. And secondly, I want to address how each of those individual entities and operators in this field can prepare to take advantage of the opportunities that will arise once the crisis abates. So let's take a look at what the industries will look like when the epidemic has ended. As many of you know, real estate and construction represent a significant part of our national and local economy. And as Tim just noted, governmental decisions to require shelter-at-home stays for most of the country will clearly throw us into a recession and increase our national deficit by trillions of dollars. Two new reports that came out just last week from the American Institute of Architects and from the Association of General Contractors both show that the design world and the construction world have already seen project delays, and it's very likely that the numbers of project delays that we've seen through March are going to increase substantially once most construction comes to a halt, except for the projects the government deems essential. More importantly, hundreds of thousands of workers in the architect, engineering, and construction world will be out of work for many months until the rebound in construction commences. From an owner's standpoint, those planning new projects can expect to see lenders take a more cautious stance on funding because new criteria is slowly being developed by the lending agencies to reflect what they anticipate are going to be substantial changed market conditions. The halt in construction is going to also have a severe impact on the nation's supply chain of products and materials, much of which come from overseas. Tens of thousands of these suppliers, vendors, and manufacturers, who are both foreign and domestic, lack sufficient capital to stay in business more than a few months. And as a result, by the time the moratorium ends, we're going to see many of those operations out of business and impacting how construction can take place until new operations can occur to build up factories and warehouses in America to accommodate the supply chain coming from the U.S. as opposed to August fees. So let's take a look about how you can specifically plan for a positive recovery from this kind of traumatic blow to the real estate design and construction world. I want to identify five important steps that smart firms in the industry will take to address the difficult times ahead. Number one, owners who have seen their projects stall should be reaching out to their architects, engineers, and construction teams to consider modifications to the designs shown in their current plans. I would suggest that they use the moratorium in a very positive way so that when they continue their project in the months ahead, and in some cases, some projects may not begin until 2021, they will be able to anticipate post-COVID market conditions and change their designs accordingly. Secondly, this is an excellent time for owners to discuss with their contractors how their projects will recommence once the moratorium on construction ends. The goal of every owner and every contractor should be to negotiate during the suspension the actual remobilization and other costs that contractors will be seeking when a notice to proceed is sent by the owner. Since these costs are going to increase the project budget, owners should be talking at the same time with their lenders to secure extensions on their construction loans and talking about how the remobilization costs are going to increase those budgets as well as extend the time for completion of their projects. Third, take a long-term perspective. It's important that everyone in this field remember the U.S. is presently in the midst of a massive growth in population. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, we will be adding another 60 million residents by 2050. And this new growth is going to spur a boom in construction of over $25 trillion within the next 20 years because tens of millions of people will be moving out of our cities into fast-growing parts of the nation. And that, in turn, is going to require new housing, schools, roads, bridges, and, of course, the necessary retail that goes along with it. Business-savvy firms are going to stay ahead of their competitors by marketing their services in these burgeoning areas of the nation. Fourth, because the current stoppage of work is so widespread, many of those in the design industry should be reassessing their current client lists and refocusing on the many new areas of design that will arise out of this crisis in the next few years. We're going to see new energy initiatives and more efficient HVAC systems that will lower operating costs for most facilities. Five, finally, owners will be demanding more and more that fixed price contract runs of 20 to 40% that pervade most large projects. These are turbulent times for our nation. And in truth, anybody who says that things will get better before they get worse is not really giving you a realistic picture. But I am convinced that our nation will see a strong rebound from the recession ahead. And with smart planning, good business plans, and good judgment, we will in time see our nation and our industry rebound strongly in the years ahead.
Thanks, Barry. That was great. Stephen, why don't you take over from Barry, and you want to kick it off now?
Sure. Thanks, Elliot, and hello, everyone. I'm Stephen Anderson, Montreal Anderson DeMarco, and I want to talk about the future of the office workplace. And I've come across 3 points. 1 point, how working remotely affects business operations. Will companies that previously avoided work from home see some of the benefits of it and adopt different policies? Businesses can now work efficiently from their home offices, I'm sure they'll find. Companies are developing VPNs to eliminate lag and increase resolution on all our drawing software. New software allows companies to communicate effectively meet remotely via video, audio conferencing, and edit jointly in real time. And then task management apps allow teams to assign, track, and complete work as a group. So we're finding all these new software pieces very, very effective from homework. The next comment I have is, what is the appeal of a physical office space? An office space allows for collaboration, head-down work, creative work, and production work that are not always available in a work-from-home environment. Collaboration or bouncing ideas off others isn't as easy when working from home. Conference rooms and open flex space supports team collaboration. Office space also is having a creative space and a neighborhood for employees to socialize and interact in reception areas, open full-stop pantry, and exciting street neighborhoods. People still want to come to work and not just be home, to come to a different neighborhood and go to a restaurant or a bar or local places in their neighborhood. Conference rooms of different spaces, sizes, functions, like phone rooms, quiet spaces, with high-end AV equipment to promote remote access, and all meetings would be important. Access to physical materials, plotting, printing, files, IT infrastructure. An office will be a base for storing materials and equipment. Physical workspace and IT electrical setups are more advanced in office spaces than at homes. Standing desks, ergonomic furniture are all important. So these are all aspects of why we think office space will still be around, but at a reduced level. What do we think the projected workplace trends will be? Flexible, forward-thinking workspace where employees have no assigned seating, so depending on the team they are work from home really does work. And social interaction, large flexible spaces may be provided for whole company meetings. Company workplace will represent their brand and identity. It will become a space for client visits, presentations, even when most of the work will be completed outside its walls. Most companies will decrease their rental space because employees can work with home or hot desks to allow for flexibility when employees work at the office. Private offices will be flexible and interchangeable with meeting rooms. Pantries, cafes will provide more individual options for food and beverage, storage, display, trash, millwork, all functional and better looking. Furniture and bar counters should double for breakout meetings, foster spontaneous collaboration meetings, and after-work parties and events. Amenity spaces will include fitness studios, gaming rooms, wellness space, bicycle racks, and areas for music listening. So those are the three components to put together for the future office workplace. I'm sure there'll be more, and I'd now like to pass it over to Richard, my partner.
Thanks, Stephen. Richard?
Yes, thank you. Handling the architectural aspect of our firm, architecture and development aspect, we've been working predominantly pre-COVID on residential rental, co-living, assisted living, and some commercial developments that involve reuse of existing facilities and infrastructure projects. So these projects all are in the works or suspended at the moment, but heavily invested and will be moving forward. And I foresee that this will be the case for a good 60 to 70% of the work that's out there. I think those projects that are on the higher end in cost and getting close to their edge on their budget will go through major reassessment and retooling of the projects. And our effort as professionals will be to react to that and help support the changes needed for our clientele. In the post-COVID environment, I see that there'll be more adaptive reuse and utilization of existing facilities for cost effectiveness, especially high efficiency planning, picking up on what Stephen's saying on the commercial side, as well as on the residential side and in assisted living. That's the new wave that was coming along, and people will be getting older. This this environment will, we will be past, and we will be on to providing the needs of everybody in our society, especially the echo baby boomers that are out there. They're coming of age and are looking to downsize, and that will actually create a higher demand. Another component of the industry that I think will take a substantial hit in the demand is going to be in hotels. And there could be a major synergy in the future of utilization of one building type for another and adaptive reuse, specifically converting second tier hotel developments into assisted living. They're the most correlated type of use with major commercial space, dining space for the residents to socialize in. The environment today in assisted living is not what it was for our grandmothers back in our day when we were young. This is a totally different lifestyle. There's a lot of people that are interested in it, and we just have to find a way to do it with adaptive reuse so that we can achieve an affordable level of assisted living for the public as a whole. This is an area I wanted to make sure we had part of our discussion for today.
That's great, Richard. That was it. Thanks so much. And I understand that Dr. Frank, you've been able to join. So if you're out there, do you want to jump in for 5 minutes?
Yes, great. So first of all, I want to thank you, Andy and the Elder Group, for inviting me today and introduce myself to everybody. My name is Dr. Frank Salvador, and I'm a board-certified urologist who also has certification in holistic and integrative medicine. The focus of my talk today is really going to be why the coronavirus has accelerated existing trends in healthcare towards greater awareness of the importance of health and wellness. In the last decade, we've seen a big increase in the interest of the public in alternative or holistic complementary medical therapies. It's now a multi-billion dollar industry. And it's something that traditionally has been serviced by a community outside the traditional medical community. But in recent years, the medical community has responded and is involved somewhat, but not as completely as I think we're going to see in the future. And I think this coronavirus is going to accelerate the trend both in the healthcare industry as well as in daily life, where people realize the importance of health and wellness. And so what is it about the coronavirus that brings us to this place? Well, a virus is different than other health issues. When you have a virus, there's really no drug or surgery that's readily available to treat this, as we're seeing as people are scrambling to find a drug to treat a virus. And viruses mutate, they change. They can change on a weekly, they can change on a yearly basis. So the best defense with a virus is a strong offense, and your offense is a strong immune system. So what we want to do is we want to go ahead and for anything, for coronary artery disease, for cancer, you want to always have your defense system at it, really not need to use this defense. So today, most patients and even doctors aren't aware how to enhance their immunity. And with the discovery of antibiotics in the late 40s and the explosion of technology and advances in surgery in recent years, the public has had a front row seat watching and experiencing the miracle of modern medicine. And in my view, it's made us a little bit lax. I think that, you know, everyone has had a concept and a culture since 1945, you know, well, we made it through the big war, and now we can rely on big medicine to take care of us. But as we're seeing on a worldwide level, devastation can come in any form, and it's not just war, but in fact, we have a war on viruses now. And then the best way to win that war is going to be with a strong immune system. So I'm going to take another couple of moments here and talk to people about what, again, is an accelerating trend in healthcare that looks at you very differently as a individual person. We're starting to realize that the best way to have a healthy person is to not just look at their kidney. I'm a kidney stone doctor, and that's how this all started. You know, I had the training to blast kidney stones and break them up and published papers on how to do this with the most efficient, atraumatic way. But, you know, my patients kept coming back with kidney stones and again and again, and I'm like, wow, you know, maybe what needs to happen is we need to have a different way of looking at this so that I can always provide them with state-of-the-art technology and surgery, but maybe we can prevent them from having that pain and suffering in the first place. So what I'm going to talk about briefly is the things that actually boost your immune system, and you probably haven't heard this from your regular doctor or your GP, but it's definitely out there on the internet, and a whole bunch of people are very, very interested in these techniques. So when we look at you in a holistic way, we don't just look at your body, but we look at the mind, the body, the soul, and the spirit. All these things are very, very important in boosting your immune system. You wouldn't expect yourself to walk down the road and get in your car and drive your car if all you were was a liver. So, you know, you need to have the entire body. And that entire body is not just the physical body. It has a mind, and the mind governs how the body feels. And then there's a soul, too, that has an impact on this. So let me just give you a couple of points because I know our time is short and then show you what I mean. In the area of mind, there's a lot of data that is out there published, scientifically proven, that mindfulness or meditative practices are used by high-functioning individuals, athletes who are at the top of their game, are putting out, I think LeBron James actually has a mindfulness meditation that he does right now for people. So if you're not looking at mindfulness and meditation and how you use your mind, you're not enhancing and improving your immune system. The body. There's so many things I could say about the body, but let's just start with the gut. The immune system, the single greatest part of what affects your immune system is your gut. And I heard there's over 100 people on this call or more. If I could encourage each of you today, stop eating any food that comes in a plastic bag. Choose something that has a raw or a natural component to your food, and make that a bigger part of your diet. In 3 days, you'll see an improvement in your immune system versus, you know, drinking a Monster and having a bag of Fritos for lunch. Moving on to the soul, you know, why did I bring this up? Because, you know, if we're doing soulless work, if we're waking up every day and we're not living our heart's desire to do what it is we need to do, we're not going to be functioning at our best. And quite honestly, we're going to become depressed and have another series of things that occur that affect your immune system. I think that during this time, everybody I'm talking to when I see my patients, because I'm still seeing patients or doing online communications, they're talking about this. They're saying, you know, I this has given me time to stop and think and decide, what is my heart's desire? And that's the soul talking to them. What is my heart's desire? What is my heart desire to do? And then how would I do this differently now that I've had a brief fatality without the big C word or a heart attack falling in our laps? And then the last thing would be the spirit. You know, the spirit is the wind behind your sails. You know, if you understand that, you know, we're body electric, we're moving through this universe, which is in a cosmos, which there are trillions and billions of other planets and universes and systems out there, one can only wonder that there would not be some force that inspires us and places us in a spirit that allows for the mind, body, and soul to be maximized on this brief tour we have on planet Earth. So this is the work I do as a holistic practitioner, in addition to a full-time medical practice in the largest urology group in the United States of America. And I look forward to any discussion that we have. Thank you so much for the time.
Dr. Frank, thank you. Thanks for everybody, the speakers. We're going to open it up to questions, but Dr. Frank, I think you bring up some great points, as all the speakers have. This virus gives us great pause to really think about how we live our lives financially, whether it's real estate, investments, or just medically. I mean, why we sit in our homes and hopefully not watch too much TV, it really gives us the opportunity to think about how we're going to come out on the other side. So we've actually received a lot of great questions, and I want to thank everybody for their questions. And I'm going to kind of go in line with the speakers with our questions. So I'll start with you, Tim. And we've got about three questions for each of the speakers. Tim, first question, when the recovery begins, which may have been today, but probably not, when the recovery begins, which sectors do you expect to outperform? And which would you avoid or underweight?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as we mentioned before in the comments, Elliot, you know, we think that those companies that have good cash flow, solid balance sheets, very, very low debt, no debt, and, you know, what we call is really importantly moats, you know, a very, very dominant position. And unfortunately, through this entire economic downturn, you're going to see companies, unfortunately, go out of business. So a lot of these companies, high-quality companies, will gain even more market share. So, you know, areas we are absolutely emphasizing, we see this trend in technology, information technology, consumer services. You're seeing it in consumer staples and of course, healthcare. Areas we're absolutely avoiding, and you can expect this, is obviously with the drop in energy prices, oil prices, et cetera, and the dramatic decline in usage. I mean, no one's driving. It's nice that gasoline's below $2 a gallon, but no one's driving, unfortunately. Energy is one, and financials, the other, is the ones we absolutely avoid at this point.
Great. Thank you, Tim. Barry, this question is for you. Why, in your opinion, will it take as long as 2 years for the construction industry to right itself after the crisis ends?
Well, let's understand certain facts that precede this turbulent time. Up until the suspension of construction across America, there had been almost a 7, 8, 9, 10-year construction boom from the Great Recession of 2008. That recession cost 1 million workers out of the 7 million workers who work in construction to be unemployed for several years. And in fact, when the boom began and picked up steam, 500,000 construction workers never came back into the business. One of the other things that marked the construction industry was a shortage of skilled workers, the specialty trades that are needed in the field for large-scale projects around the country. Workers in those specialties were not available. So that preceded a boom that was going on for many years. Now, what's happened? We're going to see hundreds of thousands of workers laid off or furloughed. Some of them may or may not come back into the industry once again, causing a greater shortage. But more importantly, we're going to see two other things. One, some projects that start up may not continue just because they raise the moratorium and tell everybody to go back to construction because it's safe. Some projects are going to fall by the wayside. Number two, as I mentioned, when you have a loss of tens of thousands of suppliers, vendors, manufacturers around the world who are critical to today's pipeline, today's supply chain, and those firms, those companies are out of business, then you're going to have a disruption that is going to take a long time to repair. Architects who routinely specify products that came from India, that came from Vietnam, that came from China, are going to have to identify domestic sources which don't exist or where their products are much, much more costly, thereby raising the cost of every construction project. This is going to put some kind of damper in the ramp-up that would ordinarily take place because the demand is there. I believe it's going to take construction industry and the design industry and the owner world get on the same page and can figure out how to solve some of these problems.
That's great, Barron. Thank you. Stephen, this question is for you, and you were touching upon it, but this question came in. How working remotely will impact business operations going forward?
Well, I think most firms had a policy of working from home, but it was probably a small percentage of workers. Now that everybody is working from home and companies have to adapt to technology changes and software changes and other things to change, I think you're going to see a more flexible and forward-thinking workspace where employees have no assigned seating. They come in when they have to use the office as a base. As a base means collaboration with teams, physical meetings with clients, presentations. And I think you're going to see a change and therefore less office space needed. But the interaction and socialization that goes along with the business fosters creative thinking and forward thinking and also brand and identity. I think most companies now are going to change their brands because they are going to be working remotely. When people are used to working from home and there's a refrigerator or different kinds of foods, I think that's another option. Company owners are going to have to plan for more productive spaces and foods. And, you know, we look forward to those challenges as we go forward and helping our clients go through that process.
Great. Thank you. Richard, what shifts, this came in, what shifts would you see in multifamily housing post COVID-19?
I think it's driving the efficiency up, reducing the size of the units down. There'll still be some condominiums being put on the market, but that's down about 60 or 70%. I think we're talking rental product and product that is smaller in size because people will need to, due to the fact that they're not going to have as much income or as disposable income for those nicer units with a great view, to more efficient units. They're going to need to downsize into these things. So smaller units, and there's product out that's going on right now called co-living, where you share, share an apartment with two or three other people, each which lease the room, not the apartment, and with common social spaces down on the first floor. We've done this when we developed a hotel called the Citizen M Hotel. It's picking up on that market, but not as a hotel, but as like a stable living environment where you have your own room and you share a common kitchenette as well as social space on the first floor. The other area is the hotel industry that's going to take a bit of a hit. And as I said before, a little bit of a repeat, but a little more effectively, the assisted living environment. There will be a large quantity of people looking to downsize out of their, you know, their 3,000 or 4,000 square foot home in the suburb. And this is now post-COVID we're talking, would try to move into a assisted living facility utilizing the assets of what they sold at home and giving them a chance to have a social environment. And that can be done more easily in a hotel than converting an apartment building, because you do need dining spaces, kitchens, support facilities, amenities, all of which can be modified with the building.
That's great. Dr. Frank, this question came in, and I'm going to change it around a little bit given what you said. But question more or less said, being cooped up at home, gyms are closed, most doctors have canceled appointments. You know, what do you do about staying in shape, staying mentally balanced, you know, everything that we were doing before, but now, you know, we're all cooped up at home. You know, do you have anything to say about just kind of keeping mentally balanced and physically balanced?
Yeah, great. Thank you. A great question. So, so actually I'm encouraging when I do my telemedicine appointments, I'm talking about the urology care, but I'm taking a segment of that to talk about this very thing. So, you know, the body thrives on a schedule, and often when we're at home, we tend to fall into a more vacation or relaxed mode. I think it's important that you continue to keep some kind of a regimen in your life when you're at home, because your body will respond well to that. The thing that I'm telling a lot of patients who used to do a one-hour commute into New York or have to be at the office for 7:30, I'm saying, you know, get up in the morning, and as soon as you get out of bed, go outside for a walk. When you go outside for a walk, when the sun is rising, there's a series of things going on in nature that will electromagnetically boost your energy. Now, I'll be very specific, is when you go to bed at night, you release melatonin, which is something that is not what everyone thinks it is, just to help you sleep, but melatonin is a antioxidant that breaks down the byproducts of the stress that you lived all day long. And if you wake up in the morning before you do anything, before you have that cup of coffee, if you do 15 to 20 minutes of exercise, you will slam off the melatonin, which you want to do, and you will turn on the serotonin, and you will turn on the testosterone in men and women, as well as the dopamine. And serotonin is the thing that when people take all these antidepressants, those are serotonin reuptake inhibitors. So serotonin reuptake inhibitors allow for more serotonin. Well, there were studies that were done that if you exercise 20 minutes in the morning, you have the same effect as if you took an antidepressant. Now, dovetail that with exercise causing the long and large muscles of the body, a nice brisk walk will activate your glutes, your thighs, and your hamstrings. That will boost your testosterone production and accelerate dopamine. So you're waking up stronger and better than you ever did when you rolled out of bed, grabbed a cup of coffee or a monster drink, and just sat in the car for 30 minutes. So that's just one of many things. I have more if time prevails.
Okay. All right. So it looks like we have time for one more round of questions. Tim, this question is for you, and it's not self-serving. It did actually come in. So I preface that. Here it is. During this crisis, our college has had a significant drop in its endowment portfolio because of the volatility. We are wondering what Clearbrook has been doing for its endowments and other clients and how they stand in the marketplace. So I preface
sure.
that this actually did come in.
Sure. You know, as you know, Elliot, you know, what has helped Clearbrook over the years is that the senior members of the investment team, including myself, we have over 35, 40 years of not consulting experience, but actually portfolio management experience. So, you know, when we in the middle of last year looked out at the economic landscape, valuations across the different asset classes, we actually started to de-risk our underlying portfolios, selling off particularly a lot of the positions in small caps, particularly in technology, information technology, growth areas that had appreciated, quite frankly, by 25-30% last year by mid-year. We started to also increase our overall exposure to high-quality investment-grade and treasury bonds, which helped a great deal. And at the end of last year, which was one of our better tactical moves, we happened to have gotten rid of any of the underlying holdings in the portfolios to below investment grade, particularly leveraged loans and bank debt. And we just, in January, got rid of all of our exposures to essentially securitized credit, mortgage-backed, asset-backed securities, CMBS. So what we've done is we came into the underweight equities, overweight fixed income, and eventually even benchmark on alternatives. So it's really taking and melding the overall long-term strategic allocation, but at the appropriate moments, based on valuations, most of the college endowments do rebalance on a quarterly basis, work with your advisor to effectively shift your asset allocation and not just do a systematic, typical rebalancing back to benchmarks, but actually look at the valuations across asset classes, securities, strategies, in order to have more of a tactical rebalance to take care of the, or take advantage, quite frankly, as we have today, dramatic changes in valuations.
Great. Thank you, Tim. Barry, in your book, Broken Buildings, Busted Budgets, you speak about the inefficiencies in the construction industry. And how do you feel about the crisis resulting in greater inefficiencies, and how, in your words, will it end up costing owners more for a project after the crisis?
Well, the construction industry is, one, the lowest user of adaptive technology available to it of any industry in the country. The amount spent is a pitiful amount, considering it's a $1.5 trillion a year industry, and both architects, engineers, and contractors have been slow to adopt it. As a result, the inefficiencies, as I report in the book, sometimes most studies show that $1 out of $2 that an owner spends on a large construction project is mostly inefficiently performed and doesn't give any bang for the buck. What we have today, though, is available technology. With the architects, the engineers, and the contractors' assistants, the actual virtual model of the building to be constructed in every detail, which can enable the owners to get fixed price contracts that will more efficiently be developed and built out during the course of the construction phase. Now, owners are slowly coming around to demanding that their architects and engineers and contractors use this technology instead of walking out into the field with paper plans and specifications, which are often the wrong plans to build from. So hopefully what we're going to see is a greater impetus on the part of owners to put together teams that want to build more efficiently, want to design things more programmatically, and enable a more efficient and productive process in the field as a result of coming out of this recession they're about to enter into.
Great. Thank you. Richard, this is for you. What other market shifts do you foresee in the hospitality and in the senior assisted living areas?
Well, I think I'm picking up on what I was saying before. It's a good question. I think that the hospitality market, even the owners of those hotels and developments, might themselves want to start getting more and more into the assisted living aspect of hospitality. I think that that is an enlargement in that marketplace that they can help justify maintaining staff, retooling their buildings to the new demand, and when that echo of the baby boomer subsides, they can also return those assets as another redevelopment, adaptive reuse again, back to these hotels. That, I think, is a cyclical situation and should be utilized as opposed to trying to demolish and build from scratch, which would be far more costly and prohibitive in this market.
Great. Thank you. So this is a long question. I thought maybe, Stephen, you could take the first part of it, and Barry, you could take the second part of it. Working remotely has worked better for some industries over the years. In the current crisis, businesses that didn't work remotely and telecommute, like finance, accounting, law firms, et cetera, have been forced to do so. By many accounts, it has gone well so far. What will this do to overall valuations and cap rates, particularly in the metropolitan areas? Has there been a large increase, since there's been a large increase of office space coming on the market in the past several years, can you comment on what you foresee the impact being?
Well, as I stated before, I think rental requirements, office requirements will be coming down because they will have policies from working home more often. They'll find it more efficient. My challenge is, how do you adopt retail and restaurant space, the ground floor space? That's really the tough one that I see. Barry, you want to take the rest?
Well, I think what we're seeing here is a perfect storm in the wake of this moratorium. In New York City, and there are other cities around the country, there has been an overbuilding, an oversupply of large residential projects, as well as an overbuilding, in some cases, of commercial office buildings. And what we're about to see with the realization that many companies are finding it very, very productive and not losing team cooperation, that they're going to leave a lot of their workers to stay at home when they renew their leases. And so what we have to look at here is, what is the total impact when we see buildings are going to be occupied when leases come up in the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and how are architects and designers going to design offices for smaller footprints by occupants who, instead of taking 200,000 square feet, may take 100,000 square feet, leaving 1, 2, 3, or 4 floors vacant in a building that previously was fully occupied.
Yep, that's great. So we're coming up on our hour, and Dr. Frank, if you could, in the next minute, just impart with us any last thoughts about keeping our health together and our sanity together.
Sure. What I would say is, I think all the people on the call bring something to that dialogue. I think that, you know, when we talked about the mind and body coming together, you know, the environment we live in has an impact on our minds and our body. The environment we experience, the news, how we experience the news, what we choose to let in, is our responsibility. It's our ability to respond to that. So what I'm telling my patients is, you know, there's a hurricane out there. Place yourself in the eye of the hurricane and just look at it. And you've done this in other areas of your life where you've been able to not be sucked into the ravages of what's going on around you. Just stay in the eye of the hurricane. If something comes at you, take care of it. And if not, wait till this thing settles out, and it's all going to be fine. So stay calm, and God bless everybody.
Thank you, Frank. Andy, do you want to close the call?
Yeah, I just wanted to thank everybody for an extraordinary hour of really incredible information, truly cutting-edge, futuristic stuff. And I can't thank you all enough for taking time out of your lives to educate the masses. We had quite a lot of call-ins, a little more than I thought we'd get. And thank everybody for taking the time to listen in. And Elliot, fabulous job moderating. And God bless everybody, and stay in faith.
All right. Thank you, Andy. Thanks for hosting. Thank
you.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.